from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Have I told you lately how much I love our listeners? I seriously love our listeners. Every single day, without fail, I learn something new. Many things that are new. Even just in that last segment that we talked about, I love hearing from our officer friends who can enlighten us and tell us about their experiences. When it comes to some of the vaccine questions, I love what our listeners have to say, even if they totally disagree with me. When they ask me questions respectfully, I love engaging, whether it's online or on the air. Your feedback means the world. It really does. And I love it. So I just want to say that.
Well, I just want to say that we had somebody from the 253 earlier today say, well, this is the first time I've agreed with G. You mean to tell me we're a year and a half into the show and today was the first day?
You know what? One at a time. You're changing minds one at a time.
We should get some t-shirts made that say just that. All right. Let's get to... Oh, by the way, 10:30, Dr. Angela Rasmussen will be joining us, a virologist. I see already that you guys have been texting in your questions. She will join us at 10:33. But right now, it is time for the top three things that you should know.
Number one.
And with fewer people now signing up for vaccines, there is an all-out effort to bring the shots to the people. You may have noticed this by now. My husband told me last night, wow, I just saw a pop-up clinic at a Dick's Drive-In parking lot. I also saw one at the QFC parking lot over the weekend. And I thought it looked a little bit strange because it was like just one car and one table set out. Now, this is all legit. So, make sure that you, check a little bit. But the mayor's office says they've partnered with Virginia Mason and the Seattle Fire Department to make this possible. So now you can get them at Mariners and Sounders games, and that in addition to what the governor announced with more capacity allowed at some of these outdoor events if you're vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Here's my question, though.
What do you get?
And this is where, again, we need audience participation, please. How do you overcome vaccine hesitancy? And we're going to talk about some of the things that other states have tried. And they're getting all sorts of creative on this. Will $100 or a six-pack of beer really make a difference if you, and I'm talking to you, if you are one of those that has still not been vaccinated, is that going to make a difference for you if you're worried about the vaccine's safety or you're fearful of needles or whatever it is that is causing you to hold out right now? And I want to hear that. So again, text us at 98973 or email us, go on our Facebook page and tell us why it is. And some of you have already done that. And again, we read all that, but that helps us in formulating also the questions that we will be asking Dr. Rasmussen. Because I think one of our goals, G, should be to try to educate and not sugarcoat. I was cool with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine being put on pause. And we had that whole discussion, but hey, if there are some problems that are popping up, you need to be very transparent about it, look into it, and then say, okay, do we have enough to say it's safe to go back into usage, right? But how do you overcome vaccine hesitancy? And I want to hear...
Trust.
Yeah. Okay, so trust, and how does that happen?
Trust. I think it just depends on who it is. Like, so to simplify it, our marketing products of any sort of kind usually has someone endorsing that product, and you might choose to buy. You might say, hey, I like this purse because I was watching this TV show and she had that purse. I like that purse. And I'm not trying to make fun of this because I'm not at all. I'm just saying sometimes it's about who you trust and who you trust to get information from. I just saw a study just recently that talked about how a lot of people go to their place of worship, their pastor, their priest, or whatever the case might be. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they are quicker to get advice from them than they are from someone that's an expert in that field, whatever it is that they choose to. So in this case, I say trust is one. And two, how we talk about this. If there's one thing, I said this to you yesterday, and I'll have to say it again. When Dre's and I did the show when you were out last Wednesday, Ursula, Dre's made me realize, and even though he and I are polar opposites when it comes to the vaccine, he is someone who has vaccine hesitancy. But if the one thing that I learned from him is this, I have to be better about those that are choosing or are hesitating to get the vaccine. I need to have more grace because it does nothing. It does no good for me to point at them and or call them a name or chastise them. That does nothing at all. So I think that the more that we have this conversation, like all the other conversations that you and I continue to have on this show, that is how we get better going forward. Like, it's not just going to happen overnight. You don't choose those cabinets in that kitchen because you saw one cabinet. You might have seen different cabinets over time that made you get to that decision. The same thing with the vaccine.
If today is the first time someone is tuning in, they don't know. You, in the very beginning, were saying, I'm okay to be at the back of the line.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I was going to say, you take me for an example. I was saying, hey, no, you first. I wasn't saying I wasn't going to get the vaccine. I was just saying that I wasn't in a rush to get it. And that's okay. So we've had also listeners, you say you love our listeners. Listeners, by the way, they tell us good, bad, or the other. We've also had listeners text in and email us and let us know and say, hey, you know what? I was one of those that was hesitant at first. Not saying that we did anything, but it has been the continued conversation that has helped them make a decision what's best for them and their family.
A listener named Lolly yesterday, she made my day, and she said, after listening to you, you convinced me, and my disabled son and I have gotten the vaccine, and it was you that convinced me. I think it's important that we do share our experiences, but again, we can't berate people for not doing it, right? Yeah. So I think we just need to do a better job of education. For me personally, I always knew that I was going to, and now I will be honest, I don't always get the flu vaccine. I'm not a big fan of shots. But in this case, I looked at what it would mean for me if I think I would have been at higher risk because I'm 55. I mean, I'll be honest, I could lose a few pounds. I don't have some of those other comorbidities, but I was worried if I got the vaccine. I know I can hear you trying not to giggle. If I got COVID, I would be worried. And people I know have died, you know, that aren't that much old, you know, maybe 10 years or 15 years older than me, and also hearing the experiences that your family members have had. So those were enough for me to say, you know what, I'm going to do it. And frankly, the biggest seller for me was the fact that I love to travel. I cannot wait to go to Europe when I get a chance to do that. I've already signed up, as you know, for the cruise. And so it's what I don't want to continue missing out on is what convinced me, not to mention I've got elderly parents that, and maybe that's the most important thing, that I want to make sure that they stay safe. However, I'm not of the mindset that these, you know, six-pack of beer or what are some of the other things that they're offering, the $50 savings bond or $100 savings bond, I think that's going to appeal to the people who are already going to do it anyway. It's like, well, I'm going to get an extra little bonus.
Yeah. Well, before we move to number two, Ursula, I just want to let you know, I wasn't holding in a laugh. You caught me drinking water.
Oh. You got to remember that your mic picks up everything. Okay.
Well, what I did was I got a straw.
Oh,
and so
you were
that
hoping that you wouldn't.
So I was hoping you wouldn't hear it. You hear everything.
I do.
Did your boys ever sneak out at night? Because they couldn't.
No.
All right. Let's get to number two.
Number two.
Okay. All of our listeners that are living out in rural communities, maybe you live in Carnation, Salton, Snohomish, Gold Bar, Darrington. Guess what, y'all? People are coming. And what I mean by that is people are moving to Washington's rural communities, according to some of these real estate reports. Realtors found the COVID-19 pandemic and working from home has allowed people the freedom to move away from their city. Carnation. Carnation, guess what? Y'all saw nearly 15% increase in median sales prices for homes with an average of 6 days on the market. Snohomish, Snohomish, I'm talking to you. Saw an increase of over 10% in sale prices. So let me get right to it and ask you, Ursula, have you thought about it? Have you thought about coming on down to these rural communities?
No. Oh. However, I do totally see the appeal. But for me, no, because right now, both my husband and I work downtown Seattle or near downtown Seattle. And my commute right now is under 15 minutes. On a good day, it's like 12 minutes, especially now in this past year. That's worth it to me. We've already invested in Seattle. My mother-in-law lives a block away. My dad's in the, you know, so there's so many reasons why we will stay in Seattle. That said, I've told you that we're looking to try to finally upgrade and remodel our home, and that comes with a huge price tag. I totally get why people would move, but I'm also very much a people person, and so the idea of more space does not appeal to me.
I'm not a people person like I used to be, but now, hold on. If you are a people person, I'm going to keep it a buck with you. Here's what I've been learning. By the way, shout out to all the small rural communities. I live down here on the outskirts. If you guys know where Midland is, that's where I am in Tacoma, close to the 512. I spend a lot of my time in the Puyallup area, but where I live in Midland is unincorporated King County. Yeah, we might not have the sidewalks. We might not have the street lights, but let me tell you something. Here's the actual opposite of what people believe. If you are a people person and you love like the interactions with people, I've come to the conclusions that in inner cities, in the cities and things like that, y'all folks don't talk to each other. You come out to the small places. Oh, hey, howdy. How you doing? Hey, nice to meet you. Oh, man. Oh, man, I like that rig. That's a nice truck. Let me tell you something, Ursula. Do you know how many conversations about trucks that I have now? When I'm man, where'd you get this? She's a beauty. you mean Sadie? That's sweet Sadie right here. Absolutely. So I love the small towns. And by the way, I'm looking forward to, if I had a goal for retirement, is to move even further out.
Really?
Get some property with a bunch of dogs out there. Absolutely. Love the small town feel.
Okay. So before anyone says, well, yeah, if you lived in Seattle, that heck hole. I'd be moving out to, I'm just saying that people are saying, of course, Seattle stinks right now, and that's why everyone's leaving. There's an article in the Seattle Times this morning that says, don't worry about downtown dying. The demand for office space in the Seattle market has come roaring back, and apparently it is even surpassing pre-pandemic levels. So as many people are moving out to live in some of these rural areas, there is a huge demand. And in fact, the city is seeing its strongest recovery since March when it comes to commercial real estate in downtown Seattle. So someone is thinking that people are going to be returning to the office somewhere.
Now,
it's not going to be Eugene, but somewhere.
I'm not going to put this place on blast, but you know how we were talking about, I'm like, hey, Ursula, everybody's wearing masks and all that.
Yeah.
So where I've gone to get some things done to my truck, and I don't know if they're listening right now, but don't worry, I won't put you on blast.
I know.
they weren't wearing masks.
You're all so right. You're laughing, but for some, that's a big appeal.
We're wearing masks.
Number three.
So this is a headline this morning. Canlis has just hired its first female executive chef in 70 years. My question for all of you is this reason to celebrate, or are you asking why did it take so long? So I'll give you a couple of details. Aisha Ibrahim is the seventh executive chef at Canlis. I love Canlis, by the way, for those very, 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 very special occasions. She's the first woman and the first woman of color to lead the restaurant, and she's going to be in charge of resetting the menu. And she's only 35 years old. She began working there in April, and she has had several runs at several high-profile restaurants around the world.
Well, I set the record straight, Ursula. I didn't say what's taking so long. I said, beautiful. This is fantastic. This is phenomenal. Great. Glad it is happening. Glad that she got this position. I think this is fantastic. I don't think anybody's asking that question, what took so long.
I am. And I think it's a reason. I do think it's a reason to celebrate, but I thought that restaurant has been there for 70 years, has had seven executive chefs, and this is the first woman to lead the restaurant. I'm glad it's happening, but we are in 2021. And for me, I look forward to the day that we don't keep celebrating these firsts. You know, the first vice president.
Jean Ursula Show? You want to bring that up? 85 years?
Yeah, exactly. I look forward to when it's just the norm, right? It's not exceptional now to have your first female executive chef. Again, no knock on Candlest because it is a great restaurant and they do lots of great things for the community, but that was something that did cross my mind.
Hey, Ursula, can you, when you, the next time you see and talk to Long Live Mark, I was thinking Floyd Mayweather is going to be fighting on June 6th. Okay. Maybe I might invite you guys down here to the sticks.
Please,
you know what
do.
I mean?
You know, we're both vaccinated.
You guys have no problem coming down here?
Absolutely not.
Hey, that's
I
right.
I love it.
Give Long Live Mark his own chair. Sit on right down here. You know what, Mark? You don't have to do anything.
We'll bring great snacks. How's that?
Oh, I like that idea.
Counts in.
Hey, coming up next, Dr. Angela Rasmussen, virologist, will join the show. Please text in your questions, 98973, the State Roofing text line. We appreciate you for listening to the Gene Ultra Show.
Welcome back to the Gene Ursula Show. Every Tuesday morning at this time, we are joined by our favorite virologist, Dr. Angela Rasmussen, and she's on the line right now. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Ursula.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to jump right in. I'm getting this breaking news right now. The Biden administration is going to start shifting how it allocates COVID-19 shots to states, moving doses from those states with lower demand to those with stronger interest in the vaccines. And this is coming as demand for the COVID vaccines have dropped nationwide. Apparently, some states are turning down part or all of their weekly dose allotments. Dr. Rasmussen, we've been talking about the vaccine a lot. I know it makes some people uncomfortable, but I want to help and we want to do our part to help educate because I think that is something that is so lacking. So all our questions are going to be related. We've got a lot of listener questions related to vaccines, if that's okay.
That sounds great.
Okay, so one of the things that we so often hear is from people who say, why is it that I would get this vaccine that has not been tested for very long? It's on an emergency use basis for, so I'm going to put something like that in my body for something that we don't know what the future will be with it for a disease or a virus that 99% of people will recover from.
Yeah, there's a couple different responses to that, that I usually give people depending on where the majority of their concerns lie. But to address just the scientific points here, a lot of people think that these vaccines haven't really been tested extensively or that because they are currently available under an emergency use authorization, that means that they haven't been, or that they're still experimental, essentially. And that's not really true. We've had both mRNA vaccines and viral vector vaccines, such as Johnson & Johnson. They've technologies have been around for years, for decades, and they've been studied extensively as vaccine technologies for other viruses. So we know that these technologies are generally very safe. Other clinical trials have been conducted for other viruses prior to the pandemic happening. In addition to that, the expedited regulatory process for evaluating these vaccines and then issuing that EUA from the FDA really didn't cut a lot of corners in terms of the number of people that participated in the clinical trials or the type of metrics that they were evaluating. So we really didn't sacrifice much besides being able to look at durability. That is how long protection lasts in terms of evaluating these vaccines on an expedited basis. And then finally, I would point out that even though the overall risk of fatality from COVID-19 is low, including for many people, especially younger people, death is not the only negative outcome of having COVID-19. A significant proportion of people are reporting that they have long COVID, and in some cases, this is a really debilitating condition. In addition to that, people who don't have severe disease and don't have long COVID can still transmit the virus to other people who are at higher risk. So to me, all of those things argue strongly for vaccines, but I think it's completely reasonable also for people to have reservations about them.
Question here from a listener. I just got my vaccine and a lymph node in my neck is very swollen. I noticed today and got very worried it might be a bad sign, like a tumor. But now a nurse friend of mine tells me that the vaccines can cause enlarged lymph nodes. Is that true?
That is true. Enlarged lymph nodes can be caused by vaccines and viral infections both. And it's really not uncommon at all to have enlarged lymph nodes after a vaccination. And the scientific reason for this is that lymph nodes and your spleen are the organs where the cells that produce antibodies and T cells, so B and T cells, the cells of your immune system, actually replicate and divide and make more B and T cells. So when you see that you have an enlarged or tender lymph node after getting vaccinated, that just means that your immune system is doing what it's supposed to build protective responses against what you were immunized with, in this case, SARS coronavirus 2.
Several of our listeners are asking if they've already gotten COVID, should they get the vaccine anyway? Is it safe?
So, yes. The current guidance is that everybody should get a COVID vaccination, including people who've had COVID before. And there's actually some data to support this. There's several lines of data, actually, that support this. One is that we don't know how long immune responses to natural infection can last. In some cases, they do appear to be somewhat durable. But in other cases, people actually don't mount very strong immune responses to their original infection. And those people potentially could be vulnerable to reinfection. We also have data that shows that just the first dose of an mRNA vaccine in a person who's had COVID before really, really boosts their levels of neutralizing antibodies, which are thought to be very protective against potential future reinfections. So overall, whether you've had COVID or not, you should definitely get vaccinated or at least consider it seriously.
Dr. Rasmussen, another question. Have there been any more studies on the vaccine for patients with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, blood cancer? When I last discussed it with my oncologist a couple months ago, she believes the shots will be only effective, 50% effective. If I haven't even had the flu shot in over 40 years, should I worry about this one?
Well, anybody who has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or any other type of cancer, especially a blood cancer, may be taking drugs that are immunosuppressive, and that can have an impact on the durability and the efficacy of any type of vaccine. So unfortunately, for SARS coronavirus 2, we don't have a lot of information about how those various conditions affect vaccination long-term. But I would argue, I would pivot to another argument for why everybody should get vaccinated who can. One of the main benefits of immunizing people at the population level is that people who do have things like non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or other immune compromising conditions are protected by those other people who are mounting really protective responses to the vaccine. So the bottom line comes back to the same thing. Please get vaccinated.
Dr. Rasmussen, another thing that we hear often and from people who are reluctant, they're saying, what's the point of getting a vaccine if I still have to wear a mask? Why do I still need to wear a mask?
So right now, people still need to wear masks because there are a lot of unvaccinated people in public, and we don't know the full extent to which people who have been vaccinated can transmit the virus to others potentially. We think that's probably pretty low overall, but in many communities, there are still a significant number of unvaccinated people. So rather than saying, okay, if you've been vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask, the recommendation is just erring on the side of caution right now and saying that everybody should wear a mask in public spaces. But I would say to people as another reason to incentivize vaccination that the quicker we get more people immunized nationally and in a given community, that the quicker that we can start relaxing some of these precautions. And we don't have to hit the so-called herd immunity threshold, which is probably above 80 to 85% vaccinated to do that. We just have to get a significant number of people, probably 60% or upwards vaccinated, and also get transmission down. When we have those two conditions met, people will be able to start taking their masks off and interacting normally and maybe even having dinner in an indoor restaurant without thinking much about it.
Dr. Rasmussen, we wish we could have you stay on longer because we still got a bunch more questions, but we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Anytime, G, and happy to answer some of those next week.
All right. Tell Taz hello.
Will do.
All right. Hey, coming up next, we do... It's Ursula's favorite. You guys know what it is. It's scenarios. We do that next. It's G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Coming up at 11:06, Governor Jay Inslee is supposed to be having a press conference, so we will be taking that live here. We will keep you updated on that. But right now, it's time for Scenarios, brought to you by Farrah.com.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
By the way, Ursula, this is kind of a sad scenario. See what you think about it. Yeah. A bunch of us at work, well, just six, are good friends. We go out to lunches together and just have fun both at work and outside of work. A few months ago, we started a group text chat to stay in touch. You know, it was fun, and mostly we use it to make fun of coworkers. Oh, that's not nice. Or the workplace, and occasionally to plan lunch or happy hour meetings. A couple weeks ago, I noticed the chat was dead. Nobody was messaging. I didn't think much of it for a couple days. So then I sent the message to get it started again by suggesting lunch. Only a couple people responded and both said they couldn't make it. No big deal, I thought, right? Well, I went to lunch on my own and on the way back walked past a diner and inside were all five of them laughing and having a great time.
Ouch.
Apparently, they made a new group chat without me in it. Now I'm angry and truthfully, I'm hurt. I'm sure they're using it to make fun of me behind my back, and I have no idea why I've been cut out of the group. They have no idea I know. I'm sure they didn't see me at lunch. How should I deal with this? 98973 is a State Roof and Text line. Ursula, you up to bat first.
Ask them. Ask them why you were cut out. If there's this was such a good group of friends and you were on there. I don't know what the whole deal is with, you know, we make fun of other people. Now he thinks if that's his biggest concern, then, you know, is that really the reason you want to have a group chat? But that all said, that is hurtful. And it's a very passive aggressive thing, or maybe just passive, to just bump someone off and don't tell them. Tell them. I mean, if you're going to bump someone off, tell them. And if you've been bumped off, ask.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yesterday, Paul, what do you got for us, buddy?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, you kind of got to live with yourself on now that they have the group text and maybe making fun of you behind your back might make rethink that. But yeah, I would just say like, hey, I saw everybody in the diner. I'm hurt by it. I'm upset, and see where that conversation goes. And if you don't like where that conversation goes, probably time to move on. Time to find some new friends.
They weren't your friends.
Well, you just admit it in the scenario that you guys used to make fun of other coworkers and the workplace. So now there's a good possibility you're thinking, man, maybe they're doing the same thing to me. It's possible. It's very possible. But at the same time, what grade are you guys in? I mean, let's be real, Ursula. everybody ain't your friend. Everybody don't really like you that way. As a matter of fact, if you have, if you believe that you have 15 people that really love you, it's probably really only five. And that's how I look at things. So as far as what you should do, do nothing. Say nothing. They can go to lunch. They don't have to coordinate with you on whether or not they go to lunch or something like that. Get you some new, get you some other lunch partners. If you wanted to go, if you want to go to lunch with them, say, "Hey guys, the next time you go to lunch, I want to go to lunch with you."
So you, you say you wouldn't even bring it up and
no.
say, "Hey, I would have loved to have joined you." See, but then you're not being your true self.
You are being your true self.
No,
it is what it is. Yes, you are.
No, I don't think that works. You're just going to be fuming. You're going to feel differently about the people. You're going to feel left out. I think it's just always best to be honest. And here is my question for this person, though. Are you sure that everyone was making fun of everyone on that group text, or was it just you and maybe they got so annoyed? Sometimes people have a lack of awareness, and maybe you were the problem and they decided we don't want this person because of what you were doing.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, just remember this. I have one golden rule when it comes to group chats and texts. I always assume that whatever I'm texting is being read by others. I'm not saying that I show people my group chats or anything, but I just make that assumption. So if you are part of these group chats and texts, and maybe you text your friends and ha ha ha, all this stuff, there's probably a good chance that their significant other has seen those texts too. So careful.
And could it be possible too that maybe there was a chance, and this is why you need to approach it, that maybe they didn't see, or maybe they assumed that he didn't answer. Sometimes things do go awry. Yeah. Give him the benefit of the doubt, but I say talk.
You're always benefit of the doubt, Ursula. That's why we love you. Hey, coming up next, Governor Jay Inslee will break into that press conference. It's the Gene Ursula Show.